I want to let you know that we have Teresa Caraggio and Veronica Caraggio in the studio. And Teresa is the producer and host of Third Paradigm, a radio think tank on community sovereignty and regenerative economics. Among other topics, she covers global issues, religion, parenting, media, animal husbandry, and education. She's founded the Universe City, which is a microversity for social change. In the current class, she and her daughter post responses to Democracy Now! While cooking for Food in the Hood, a neighborhood fundraiser. In 2010, Food in the Hood raised $9,000 for grassroots charities around the world. She's also a member of the Transition Santa Cruz's local food working group and a mother to three teenage girls in a house with one bathroom. I love that. Wonderful. So with that, Veronica, Teresa, welcome to KZSC and the listeners of KZSC in the Monterey Bay.
Thank you so much, Kevin. This is wonderful to be here.
Mm-hmm. You've got this great smile, and you've been laughing, and you seem like such an energetic person. Yet, I still wonder how it is that you are able to do all these things that you do. This is, folks, when you go on the website and you look at Third Paradigm, if you pull it up, you'll see that there's a whole lot of good things going on. And I have this idea that you're this single citizen out there really just saying, well, if nobody else is going to do it, I am.
I'd say that's not exactly true, because okay. I have a lot of really, I think, good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But how I decide which one to pursue depends on who comes out of the woodwork to meet me.
Mm-hmm.
And so with those fantastic websites that I have, there is a guy named Mike Sirocco who about a year and a half ago had heard my radio show, and he sent me a note and he said, if you ever want a free website, I do that for you.
Hmm.
And so I sent back, and you know, I found out later that I was the second person he had offered that to. The first was Noam Chomsky.
Oh my goodness.
Who sent him a polite note turning him down.
Uh-huh.
And his loss was my gain.
Wow.
So Mike has really been my enabler.
in a good way.
Yeah, he's put together three websites and all of them multifaceted. He's taken all of the 64 episodes of Third Paradigm and turned each one into a multimedia presentation, embedding videos and photographs and hyperlinks. And so in a sense, it's been a conversation, because when I go back to my shows, to my transcripts, after he's gone through them, then I check out all the hyperlinks, and I want to do another show on all the great things that he's connected it to.
Right.
So that's been wonderful. And if there ever is a club for geeks for the greater good, I'm nominating him for president.
Geeks for the greater good, because he's definitely a geek.
He definitely is. He does great things. And now we've worked together for about 18 months, sometimes exchanging many emails a day. He lives in Santa Cruz, and we have never met.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Never talked on the phone, only through email.
Unbelievable. That hardly seems right. Wow. You said that he heard you on the radio, so that would be pirate radio, free radio?
That was on Free Radio Santa Cruz, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you still involved with him?
I'm not.
Okay, because I remembered there was a little, just outgrowing it or something.
Yeah, now I do everything on the podcast. They still are playing my show, Sundays at 1:30. Mm-hmm. They put it on. But it actually has, I think, a bigger following in other countries. A couple stations in Canada will play it. There's a station in the UK that plays it, I think, three times a week.
Mm-hmm.
There's a friend of mine who's down in Bangladesh, and he and I, he took over another show called Unwelcome Guest. And so he and I sometimes partner on that, a show that had been, I got to do the 10th anniversary episode of Unwelcome Guest.
Mm-hmm. This says here on the website, Third Paradigm has been featured on these shows and stations, Unwelcome Guest, The Ringer, WHCL, Hamilton College, Global Notes, New World Notes. and has been viewed from. So that's the multimedia aspect from places like Liverpool and Sydney, Australia, and Melbourne, Victoria.
Mm-hmm. Right. Another really nice thing that Mike did was put a map on there, so it shows every time someone views the show. And so
he's on it.
Yeah, it's all these different countries, and it's been so exciting to see that.
I would think that would get you really jazzed in the morning, going, there's a whole community out there waiting for what's happening next.
Well, I don't know if they're all downloading, but at least there are people kind of checking it out. And Mike had said something that was really, really touched me. He said, you know, I'm just so glad to see that there's someone like you who's an emissary, who in all these different places, many of which are not particularly friendly to the U.S., like United Arab Emirates or Uzbekistan, you know, strange kind of places that people are actually looking at this and seeing that there is, I guess, a voice of a more reason than what they might see.
Yeah.
Or an original voice. It's pretty original, what you're saying.
You think your mom's got an original voice?
I definitely think my mom's got an original voice.
Yeah, I think so too. I think of you, Teresa, as, you know, right up with Amy Goodman. It's like you should have a larger audience.
Well, that is the highest praise possible, so I'm definitely touched.
You know, with a whole lot of people to support you and get involved, because obviously you have a lot of energy and a lot of interest, and this linking that you're talking about, and it sparks so much in you that the world is just a buzz in your head. Makes me wonder, when you were a little girl growing up, were you just the curious George, your nose into everything?
I would say more that I was a contrarian.
A contrarian. And tell me about that.
I think that I started out being the rebel, where it was always opposing whatever it was that someone wanted me to do.
And this was at what age? I mean, you come from a big family. You're opposing your brother's sister's mom, dad, or this is later on in high school that you're opposing?
I think it would have been growing up and definitely through high school. And I was someone who, I went to a Catholic grade school, high school, and college.
I'm sorry to hear that. I only made it through elementary school.
It's come in handy to, you know, you should know what you're researching. And it's given me a lot of background to be able to take a very different approach to all that.
They set a good basis, actually. We were Jesuits, priests, kind of. The Jesuits did a good job in education.
I actually went to a very radical Catholic high school. And at the time, I don't think I had the grace to appreciate it. Mm-hmm. But it was the first co-ed high school, Catholic high school, in Western Maryland. And so it attracted all of these radical priests and brothers and nuns and lay people. And there is no one who's as amazing as a radical Catholic.
Western Maryland, I lived in Harford County in northeast of Baltimore. So we're in Maryland.
Cumberland.
Oh, Cumberland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I have a buddy who I visited up there in college.
Compared to Santa Cruz, though, it's not exactly what you describe a radical town or that being a radical school compared to mine or something. But
you've been through there?
Yeah, I went back over the summer and saw her old high school and went back and got the real tour. And just, I mean, it's definitely more contemporary than when she went, but still, compared to Santa Cruz High, it's not considered radical.
Okay, but this was a while ago.
You
graduated from high school when?
Whew. Quite a while. Let me think. 40 years ago.
What was the year then? 72, 70.
70, I think.
70, okay.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Didn't you have the little...
75,
I don't know. We were 72, so it was smoke, dope, drink, brew. We're the class of 72. Didn't you have a little something like that? No?
Well, you know, I wasn't a joiner. That was part of the contrarian thing. I actually dropped out of high school early, thinking that I was just going to write poetry and hang out in Santa Cruz for the rest of my life. Or hang out in Cumberland, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And And then my mom talked me into turning in this application late for a scholarship. And I went to Philadelphia to interview for it. And everything that I said, they laughed. And I couldn't understand it. I thought they were just making fun of me. I thought that I was just so provincial that, you know, that they didn't know what to do with me. And I came out of the interview and everyone was looking at me saying, you know, what was all that about? And I just shrugged, figuring, you know, I had completely blown it. And I went home, and later on, I found out that I had been their first choice. I had been their unanimous first choice. And that in particular, I remember saying, you know, I was going to be a religion major. And they said, well, you realize that you're coming from the most liberal diocese. Mm-hmm. And it really was the content of that school that was special. Not, you know, it's really tamed down now. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I would have Christian brothers who would ride their motorcycles through the halls to get to their classes, ones who would, like, turn everything upside down. They'd have, like, the titles of their classes would be three lines long. And we would hold these very avant-garde masses in this chapel that had one brick in and one brick out, and you could literally climb the walls, which we did. So it's changed quite a bit, but that was, you know, that was really my start. And they said, well, you realize you're going from this liberal diocese to the most conservative, and, you know, do you think that's the right thing to do? And I said, well, that's why they need me.
Right. Yes.
And by the first semester, I changed my major to psychology.
And you followed through with that, or you did the 4 years, or are you?
I did the 4 years, and I ended up being psychology and creativity, and then I was up for a fellowship, and they said you have to apply somewhere, and so I said, well, there's this one school in Santa Cruz, and I've never heard of Santa Cruz, but there's that song about San Jose. And so San Jose is probably a pretty nice place. And Santa Cruz is kind of close to it. Mm-hmm. So I'll apply there because there's a great teacher in the psychology of creativity, which was Frank Barron. Uh-huh. So I came here to study with him.
That's sweet. It's psychology of creativity. Because if anything, that's what I think about you. I think you have a very creative mind. And so when it comes to the psychology of creativity and mass media and human beings and this world and what it's turning into for, you know, Veronica's generation, what do you sense? What are you sensing? Where are we going in the larger scope of things? I do a show on Sunday mornings called Conciliation Sunday, and it's about uniting mind, body, spirit, and emotion. Mm-hmm. And there's all this thought that we're in the midst of this great turning that's going on, and that somewhere humanity is going to finally live up to their potential and raise their consciousness and create a world that works for everybody. What do you think?
Well,
what are the odds of that?
Well, I think that where...
And then we'll ask Veronica what she thinks the odds of it are.
So you can be thinking. Mm-hmm. I think that where I've changed from being the contrarian and where the idea behind the title Third Paradigm comes from is that what I realized is that reacting against something was really accepting the same paradigm.
Right.
And so in everything that I'm doing, I'm saying, okay, there's this side and there's that side. But rather than going for some compromise position in the middle, there's this totally different way. You know, there's this way that's off the chart. And we're not looking at it that way. We're not thinking about not just, you know, to use the bipartisan kind of way of looking at things, that to be a nonpartisan, to be a complete other. So I think that actually things could change remarkably quickly. I mean, really as quickly as we change our mind about who we are and what we are in relationship to each other.
Yeah, there's that study of the 100 monkeys, they call it, the Japanese scientists studying monkeys on these islands, these separate islands, and how they were dropping yams to the monkeys. And somewhere along the line, the younger monkeys started to wash the yams in the ocean because it had sand all over it. And they got quite a few, and the older ones weren't really doing it, but the younger ones were. Finally, something kind of clicked where they all were washing the yams in the water. They all kind of got it. But what was really strange was even on other islands, all of a sudden it got into the universal consciousness, and those monkeys started washing their yams in. So there's this kind of thought like, we get enough people thinking about it, and it could happen, or thinking the same way. And I like your idea of the third paradigm. I'm going to say there's 4, 5, 6, because when we only have two ways of being, wrong or right or pro and con, we really don't have any choice. It's just a dilemma. And it's not until we get the third choice or the fourth option or the fifth option that we actually have a choice. So Veronica.
I might need the question repeated. I guess for me, I do feel like everyone is connected. I just feel like there's a lot of forces really confusing a lot of people. I think the media confuses a lot of people and makes it so we can all connect. And I feel like we could, but something drastic, I feel like, has to happen to really make sure nothing else distracts and everyone is connected. And I'm kind of worried about what that will be, to be honest. I'm worried it'll be a pretty negative force. But I definitely see a lot of people who, through different ways, realize the problems of the world. You know, how even though maybe the sci-fi writer doesn't, like, take it the same way as someone like my mom, it's still sort of like they both realize something's wrong and they both have made kind of different solutions that in both situations would be kind of considered otherworldly almost, or kind of unreal. So I kind of feel like something will need to happen and then maybe we could all be connected. But right, I'm a little too worried about what that will be.
That's great. Absolutely wonderful. There's a sense for me with the whole economic downturn and all the banking system and all that, that what it has brought is a new awareness to everyone. And because we're so connected these days, and especially economically now, we're all becoming aware. All these other countries are becoming aware of one another, and we're realizing our humanity also. Just the simple things that we all need of housing and food and care, health care, and creative outlets, some kind of work that helps, that promotes a community well-being, something along those lines.
Yeah, I think that the economics, though, I'm not sure whether it connects us, because the system that we're in really pits us against each other. You know, money is a more for you means less for me kind of system, and I think that has to really crash before we're going to start considering different options. The way that if I were to predict what that's going to be, I think it's going to come as a food crisis sometime in the next, I don't know, maybe 10 years if we're lucky, but maybe sooner than that. And so a lot of the work that I do and that Veronica and I do together is around food. We had a great thing that we were able to pioneer in Santa Cruz, where there's something called the Grow Food Party Crew, which are a couple of guys who did it in L.A. and then came up here. And so we had the first one in Santa Cruz at our house. And it's a group of people who just come over and in one day, they put in a food garden.
Oh, sweet.
And then, you know, you throw a party. And, you know, there's always somebody playing music. And it
was a big potluck. Yeah, brings food.
Yeah. I like this. I've had thoughts of writing short stories along these lines of what we might be doing in order to help usher in these new things.
Yeah.
And I have a personal opinion that says every house in every neighborhood needs to have a little compost pile in the back and a small garden. And if it's older folks in there, then kids in the neighborhood come and tend to it and take care of it. But everybody has to have a little something going on.
Yeah. It's unnatural the other way, the fact that no one does. You think about it and you're like, well, so we bring our waste to other places and we get our food from other places. And it's all very separate. And the chickens that we have at our house, we have like
five
chickens. Yeah. And they really made me realize how useful chickens are. I mean, with waste disposal, they eat everything. And just sort of, why doesn't everyone have a chicken to get rid of some of their waste? It sort of made me realize how composting as a city is sort of maybe not the smartest thing. And I don't know, just how useful and connected everything is with gardening. I mean, you make compost, you put it on your plants, and then they grow and give you food, and then you make more compost. I mean, it really is. It's very connected, and it's weird. It's really bizarre that in our system, it's not at all.
Mm-hmm. And it really gets you in touch with nature and just the way life is, and almost mystical forces that happen. That death and living, and what comes out of the compost are these living things. It gets to be pretty miraculous stuff.
Yeah, Veronica gets very connected with nature. She is the queen eviscerator because...
Eviscerator. Okay, we're going to use some big words here now. Let me see, where's my dictionary? Eviscerator.
Because we have gotten into not only laying hens, but also meat chickens.
Right.
And we help out at a place called Early Bird Ranch up in Pescadero.
Okay.
Although that's as professional as we've gotten. We've done things a lot less so before that.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
At home, you mean?
Backyard butchering.
Pluck those feathers fast because you got to get them within the first few minutes. Otherwise, they want to stay in. Yeah. I've done a little bit of that myself. Turkey was a big deal.
Yeah. I actually just helped out doing a bunch of turkeys. Both at Early Bird and at another place that's up in Soquel. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work. And yet it really gets you in touch with that because there has to be a little ceremony or ritual when you're taking the life of this animal. And there's a lot more connection and understanding of, and this has been going on for how many thousands of years?
It's so bizarre that so few people have done that. I mean, there was once I was watching a movie, like a romantic comedy or something, and the main character goes out to Ireland at part of it, and the main guy goes out in his backyard and he grabs a chicken and he shakes it and it kills it, and I mean, he means to do this. And she just starts going off about, oh, I thought chicken came from the supermarket. I thought it came from the white foam in the butcher section, you know? And you're just like, I mean, it was kind of funny, but it was also a little bit like, that's kind of true for a lot of people.
Absolutely, it is.
That's kind of alarming. I mean, it's definitely been an eye-opener. I mean, people have asked me, wait, you butcher chickens? Like, I don't think I could do that. And you gut them. And, like, I don't think I could ever do that or ever eat chicken again. And you're like, you get hungry enough. I mean, you don't. it doesn't really become an option.
You are tuned into KZSC Santa Cruz, 88.1 FM. 20,000 watts up here in the little cabin up at the UCSC campus, broadcasting to the potential audience of 2.5 million people. Don't freak out, Veronica. They're not all listening. And we're back. So let's talk about Food in the Hood a little bit more. This is one of the many things that you do, but this is a really local, proactive. We're giving money to charities, and how does it work? On that part of the website, there's even the dishes. You take pictures of all these gorgeous this food that you make.
No, that's that's false advertising.
Is it? What are all those pictures on there for?
I steal them.
Steal
them from the web. I don't actually make the food enough ahead of time to take the pictures and to put out with the menus. So I have to cop to that.
Okay, so but you do renditions of them.
But I do, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so so what we do is I think we're about every other week over on Walnut Avenue. We have a neighborhood dinner party now. It used to be we had them in the front yard during the summers. And sometimes we would have people who came and played music. We had the ukulele guys from the Santa Cruz High.
Mm-hmm.
And we just would put out all this food, and people would come, and they would take it to go, or they'd eat there, and then they'd donate whatever they wanted to a different global charity.
Mm.
So it's been really fun. It's, I would say 2 years ago, at Obama's inauguration,
mm-hmm.
I probably only knew maybe four of my neighbors. And now I know every person on the block. Veronica has keys to about every house because she's been dog sitting, house sitting, cat sitting, babysitting, plant sitting.
Yeah.
It's great. It's more how it used to be. I remember as a kid in the neighborhoods, we used to go around and collect S&H green stamps we were trying to collect enough to buy a bus for the school.
Huh?
But yeah, there was more of this, you knew each other and people weren't afraid to knock on a door, and young kids weren't afraid or thinking something terrible was going to happen to them or whatever.
Yeah, you hear about, or at least I hear about stories where they say, oh, I went and asked my neighbor for eggs or butter, but mm-hmm. a lot of my friends and their houses in their neighborhoods, they would never do that. They would rather go at midnight or something to the 7-Eleven and buy really weird looking anything rather than go to their neighbor and ask for anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just no connection. And I guess my dad also talks about how he used to just run about the neighborhood mm-hmm. and not really have to worry about any weird, you know, pedophiles or any mm-hmm. sorts of creepy people, because everyone knew each other and everyone was watching out for each other. And if you saw a little kid in front of your house, you know, there would be older people sitting in front watching, you know, mm-hmm. and it would just be a lot more connected. And
yeah.
Now that never, no one plays in their front yard.
And if the kids were acting out and doing something they weren't supposed to, any adult that was close by would say, hey,
yeah,
what's going on with you? Would your parents like you to, would they be proud of you to be doing this? Aren't you the little one, Veronica, that lives right down the street? Your mom, she's such a great mom. How, yeah. Why are you acting out like this?
No, exactly. Now everyone knows me and everyone in our neighborhood, and nothing can happen. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's great. Hmm. So in that, yeah, you become unafraid. And strangers are just people, friends you haven't met yet.
Well, we keep expanding our grasp, too. So now we're down Cleveland and we're up Sherman. And so we have all these different streets that are connected. And there's different people who have who bring different talents to it.
Right.
I get vegetables from all these different people's gardens. They bring us bags and bags of apples.
Yeah, certain times of year.
Yeah. We process this food while we're watching Democracy Now.
Mm-hmm.
And we also watch different videos that will be connected to that. All of my daughters and my husband and I will watch one video a week that is on some progressive kind of theme.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives us a lot of time to be able to, do something with our hands while we're listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that I actually listen better when I have something that I can do. I think that our lives actually require a lot of manual labor that we're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to bring that back, I want to have a way that you can engage your mind and also be doing something productive.
Yeah, it's almost like making quilts or something, and you're doing something, but you're also talking the talk and sharing right. what's going on in the family. There's a couple great magazines, Yes Magazine and Ode Magazine. I think it's Yes Magazine this this month's issue, and they talk about neighborhoods and this idea of this restoration of neighborhoods where they began. It started out very small, and I'm thinking of you guys, where they went around and they started finding out what gifts each person had to offer to the youth, to educate and as a mentors. And here are all these older people who they didn't know anything about, and they found all these skills, all these talents. Everybody could share different parts, and all of a sudden there was this trading going on. It was just fabulous, and the thing has grown and blossomed, and now there's more in other neighborhoods, and it's this whole, I don't know, this leads into University.
Right.
What's up with that? What is this other wild thing you have going on here in University? It's kind of a educational format, isn't it?
Yeah, and before I kind of go
ahead.
Fully into that, though, what makes this neighborhood enterprise a little bit different to me, though, is that it has this global focus. That what I've always struggled with is that I don't like prioritizing people based on their physical proximity to me.
Okay.
That when people give charity, they tend to give charity mostly to their community and then maybe nationally. And actually, you know, they do a lot more for their pets than they do for people around the world. And so now what, or even for other people's pets. But now what I've looked at is that the thing that really joins us is a global focus. So the causes that I choose are ones that are typically pretty edgy. I go for more social justice movements, people who are working in their communities where the money goes fully to another country, doesn't pay people in the U.S., and goes to build up their own sovereignty to help people who are pushing back against free trade agreements that are bankrupting their farmers and forcing them and off their farms. So it's more of a political education than it is just a fundraiser, a local charity fundraiser.
Yeah, no, it was women in the Congo, was it?
Right, right. That our last cause is that we've been raising money for Eve Ensler, has started the City of Joy.
Okay.
Which in the Congo, they are the victims of, I mean, the word rape doesn't even describe it. It's so much more destructive than that. It's really a weapon of war. And the women go and they are repaired at this hospital, but then they have nowhere to go where they feel safe. And so Eve Ensler, while she's struggling through cancer and chemotherapy herself, she has been raising money for a city that she's building right around that hospital. And so the women are themselves building the city, and so it's giving them and their children a place where they can stay and they can be self-sufficient and they know that they're safe.
Amazing. You know a lot about the world and the travesties that are going on, and I imagine some of the good stories also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the best. I find that the more that you know about what other people are doing out there, the more strength that you have. I think that people are afraid to look at it because they're afraid that they're going to get weighed down by guilt. Because deep down inside, I think we all know that we're complicit in this.
Yeah, right.
And so with the Food in the Hood, one of the things that I wanted to do was give people a way of kind of getting over that guilt, of almost tricking them into forgiving themselves, because you know you're already giving money to this cause, and so you've already psychologically sided with people who are doing something about it, and I think that that allows people to understand what's really happening, and you just find out about how many strong people are out there. Both here and there, my neighbors are magnificent, and I had no idea what an incredible neighborhood I lived in.
Yeah, so much heart that people have, and and it comes out when we're in community.
Yeah.
What have you been finding with the food in the hood, and what are you learning from all that, Veronica?
Well, it is. For me, it's a lot more about the neighbors. Because that's been the most close to us difference. So I have just found that it's been a way for everyone to connect, because not only do we know other people, but other people are meeting their neighbors, you know, and that really is important. And I've seen the difference, because when I was growing up, we didn't know. We knew maybe one, that there was a girl next door who kind of was the same age as me, but not really. And now when Cassandra, my youngest sister, goes out, it's a lot more, I don't know, I just feel a lot safer for her, and it just feels a lot like she goes to school at Mission Hill, which is just a couple blocks away, and when she walks home, it doesn't bother me at all. But when I walked home, it was a lot more, you know, I just didn't know who was around. And
right, and when we don't know, the imagination can just take off, especially with, as you were saying before, what the media throws out at us to confuse us and keep us separate and kind of alienated.
Can I throw out some web addresses?
Please.
So that people can look at these for
themselves. And we'll do it again at the end of the show also.
Yeah. So foodinthehood.org.
Okay.
Has all the menus and all the causes that we have done over, I think we started putting them on the web about 9 months ago.
And how long have you been doing it?
A year and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. We started when school got out in 2009.
And
then thirdparadigm.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you can spell third either way. You have to spell paradigm right, though. And then university. Mm-hmm. CITY.US. And so to talk about that a little bit, the concept behind the university was that I've done a lot of research into higher education, the loan business. There's a book called The Student Loan Scam that I talk about in one of my shows. And feeling that, well, part of it is the high cost of education that I think drives kids either into debt or into the military. But it's also...
Or into depression.
Right. And, but it's also looking at how corporate-driven the agenda is, the Carnegie credentialing system. There's a reason that it was funded by one of the world's wealthiest people.
Businessmen, right?
Mm-hmm. And that I feel that there's no longer a sense of young people developing to where they are an asset to their families or to their communities.
Mm-hmm.
That really, you know, we're raising our kids so that they can be an asset to the business world.
They don't have a whole lot of just world knowledge or skills or how to hang out or be or take
cook.
Care of themselves or cook or any of that kind of stuff. That's what you learn out there, right? Until then, we're nursemaids.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And so it does foster this dependency.
Uh-huh.
And so what I wanted to do was have a different way that made an education possible for cheap. And, you know, right now it's certainly for free because it's very small. You know, mainly it's Veronica and I. And the first class that we've put together is one that we call Connecting the Dots. And DOT stands for Deepening Our Thinking on Sovereignty.
Oh, I like it.
And so with that one, we use Democracy Now! as a springboard. And then I write questions and post them to the university.us, actually to a section of that that's called Connecting the Dots. And then Veronica will post her responses to it. So we talk about it, but we also wanted to put things onto a larger scale. And we're hoping that we get more people to join us.
Join in the commentary. So
yes.
That people would write their own.
Right.
And when you do a commentary, is it 200 words? Is it?
There's no limit.
Okay.
It's less commentary, though, than answers or responses. Like, my mom will have, they'll bring up a topic, maybe a headline, and she'll want me to research it a little bit more, okay. And then I'll do the research and respond. So, it's pretty much, like, answers to specific questions, but there's not a word limit.
Okay, but you get to practice your critical thinking skills,
yeah,
and your investigative skills.
And also listening skills, something that I've kind of had to learn the hard way is being in a public high school, we wrote, the teachers would write it on the board or they'd have an overhead and then they'd say it, and just hearing it is something that's actually really difficult for me. And I've noticed other people, just if you listen to just radio like we are now, and right, you don't see it in front of you, it's a lot more difficult for me to kind of know what's really going on and focus.
Right.
And so
there's a lot of people who are wired differently. Also, the attention deficit disorders and things of that nature. Some folks are very good, more auditorily wired. Some are visually wired. In this society, it seems like more than ever, it's a visual world. It's images and all that kind of thing. I can't help but imagine that in doing this practice, it helps you presence yourself and get in touch with maybe some inner core of you that helps you make decisions and teaches you how to pay attention for longer periods instead of just the small little...
Yeah, no, it's definitely been teaching me to really, like, focus. Mm-hmm. Because, honestly, in school, you have to focus to a certain extent.
Right.
But this is a lot more like, I have to focus on this. I can't just read it. And then if I'm not focusing on it, reread it. You know, if you're reading something, you can easily reread it if you didn't really get it. Whereas listening, you can't do that. And so it is a certain degree of focus that I've really had to struggle with because I'm out of practice. I think it's something like story. My mom talks about how people used to tell stories a lot more. And now it's just like, nobody tells stories. I mean, really, without pictures or anything, I think that visually...
I'm going to have to find out. I think it's Yes Magazine. Might want to pick it up. This is all along talking about the loss of stories and just the potency of that and how it used to be back when oral traditions and passed on. It was,
And speaking of Yes Magazine and David Corton, leads into another class with the university that we're looking at launching this next semester, which we call Glocal Economics.
Glocal?
Glocal. You know, I saw the word.
I love the way you have fun with words. This poet in you is... Mm-hmm.
Well, I stole this from NextSpace.
Okay.
I think it was Sun who coined it, that they had something up there that says Glocal. And the way that I use the word is that it's local, but in a global context.
Mm-hmm.
That with economics, I think there are a lot of local currency movements and things that are saying, well, in my words, now that global exploitation isn't working so well for us, let's take care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And what I'm saying is, not only is that not very ethical, but it won't work.
Mm-hmm.
We are 98% dependent on other people for our food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's only 2% of people in the U.S. who are farmers, and half of them are over 60. So there's no way that we can actually scale up to the degree that it would take to be able to take care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a system that is designed to work against it. So I think that the only way that we're going to be able to make it is by partnering with the people who are in the producer nations now. And both, you know, both with things like the charity is not a very good word for it. I really look at it more as partnering. So what we're going to be doing in this next semester is doing a really deep dive into understanding economics. There's a book by Ellen Brown called Web of Debt, which talks about things like how money is created, who owns the Federal Reserve. Mm. and those things really explain a lot, mm-hmm. because I know a lot of people are disillusioned with Obama. I don't include myself only because I didn't have any illusions to begin with.
You and me both.
But if you understand how the money works, it's evident that really anyone in government is a puppet.
And that economics in itself is very much the illusion, and it's all a confidence game. And when you lose confidence in it all, sometimes we get our ideas from movies. And I recently saw Wall Street with Michael Douglas in it.
Right.
He gives a great speech in there that kind of wraps up the whole economic game.
Yeah.
And I've done enough reading to know it is very much smoke and mirrors.
Yeah. And we go to a really deep level of talking about the philosophy of money in terms of what is money. Mm. We talk about it all the time as if it exists. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, people never debate the existence of money. Mm-hmm. They debate the existence of God all the time. But money is really a concept.
Mm-hmm.
And what we think that symbol represents is a unit of trade. But if you look at all the goods, you know, if we check out all our clothes that we're wearing here, I mean, we know that there is nothing that we're actually giving to the people who make these clothes in return for what we get. So if our entire culture, our entire society isn't giving and isn't trading anything, then how is it possible that we get all the stuff? So those are the kinds of questions that we're going to be looking at.
Those are big questions.
They are big questions. But with every different area that we research, we're also going to be coming up with new ideas, with new ways that it could be done, and then putting together a new vision. Mm. Now, my phrase is that hope is the thing with wings, but a vision is the thing with feet.
Mm.
It needs to be grounded, and it needs to show how you get from here to there step by step.
Pragmatic and realistic.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it needs to have all these different pieces, because you can't fix something over here that ends up being at someone else's expense over on this side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're working on, and right now we meet on Wednesdays from 12 to 2 at my house. I'm getting a really big table that can seat 14 people made. And we'd love to have more people.
And people will get a hold of you how to do that?
Well, all of the websites are interconnected, and there is a contact on there.
But, okay, so they'll go to Universe City.
To universecity.us or thirdparadigm.org or foodinthehood.org.
Okay, all of them. Great.
Yeah, and I'm Teresa at thirdparadigm.org.
Yeah, I love the sparking that you were doing about saying how we're connected to the women in the Congo. We're all complicit. I think I have been guilty, my own self, of going, you know what, how much can we actually do for folks off and away when we're not even taking care of our own? But I love this dance that you're playing of the micro and the macro. You're doing both.
Yeah.
You're informing and inspiring your neighbors to give to something larger and bigger. And at the same time, you're introducing them to something bigger.
The subtitle for foodinthehood.org is building global unity through local community.
Mm-hmm.
But it could as easily be reversed, because we're also creating that local community by finding that we all really want to be doing something about what's going on in the world. We just don't know what it is.
Yeah, something meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
What else you've been sparking is that each place in the world has its own unique problems and solutions. What necessarily would work here wouldn't in this environment and ecology and class of people and types of people wouldn't work somewhere else. So it's... we're all being asked, and I think maybe it goes along the lines with the money question too, is how are we going to relate to one another in our own particular situations? If we're a farming community, we're going to be different than if we're down in San Francisco or this, that, and the other thing. There's so much opportunity for people to get involved and for it to be different and to be really creative to find out what works for their area.
The way that I prioritize is that with my time and with my presence, you mm-hmm. know, I need that I can do locally. You know, that's what I can give locally. And food, you know, food is a very, very good common denominator locally. But with my money, that's where I say I want it to go where it can do the most amount of good. Mm-hmm. To find the places where it just takes a little bit to enable these people to be able to take care of themselves, and that's how I prioritize where I give money.
Almost more bang for your buck. What's most urgent and what really needs to.
Not even so much urgent, because there's a lot of those. I mean, that's kind of a, you know, that
everyone says the urgent need for blankets in the Indian country or urgent for, right.
Right. And so that's why what I go for isn't charity, because that's never ending. What I go for is people who are fighting for their own sovereignty. Mm,
teaching people how to fish instead of giving them fish.
They already know how to fish. We're looking at the trade agreements that we are doing that are preventing them from being able to keep the fish that they catch.
Mm-hmm. I need to switch CDs so we can record this for Teresa and Veronica, because Veronica's going to want to listen to herself for first time on the radio. And I have to say, you're doing splendid.
I'm absolutely
impressed. So you have the articulation and gift of gab like your mom.
Oh, what a compliment.
So where are you going next?
Now, there's this Community Radio Act that has passed where it should be much easier to do low-power FM stations. The way that I've envisioned this university is that it would be a network of kind of microversities, but joined by this common curriculum that's delivered through the radio. So what I really would love to see is a radio station that's specifically for global education.
Yeah.
Where every time you tune in, you're going to learn something new. And that we can make it, I think there's a way to make it so that you have the flexibility of every person being able to do what they want to do locally, but also have the continuity by making it an internet station, which then can be rebroadcast by any of the low-power FMs, but then can also be overridden whenever they want to do, you know, their own shows.
Got it. Some of these dreams seem like they would move a little faster if they had some money behind it.
So I started out with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Free Radio Santa Cruz operates on $700 a month. That's their budget. Mm. $550 of that is rent. Some of that is for the internet connection.
Hmm.
So if
you can do
you're
a lot.
Now they're not licensed, you know, so operating under the table or off the radar or whatever it is, as a pirate station, you know, I'm sure you save some money there too. But if you're not paying employees, if it's a volunteer operation, you could be doing this out of somebody's backyard. It doesn't take a lot. And so I don't know. I think we could do an awful lot with a little bit, with just a little bit of money, but mainly with just people who want to make it happen.
It almost has to be homegrown in a certain way so that other people can go, oh, yeah, Teresa, she started off on a shoestring and it worked out. And, you know, it was amazing how things just kind of always kept happening and supporting. And because people can repeat that model. Oh, you got to have faith. You got to have hope. You got to
right,
have vision.
Right.
You got to trust.
Yeah.
All those kind of things. What about, Veronica, trust and faith and all that kind of stuff? And what kind of keeps you going with the thought? Because a lot of folks, I'm imagining kids in your generation, are looking out there and going, wow, the paradigm of work until you get rich and retire early is kind of going to the wayside, and retirement won't be there. And so how do I live my life, and how do I live life with hope and inspiration?
The media is very negative about my generation. I think it's called, they're calling my generation Generation Y. Is that? I saw something like that, but everyone's saying, like, and you won't have any retirement, and who knows if the world will even be around in 2000, after 2012, and just all this other stuff. And I guess it makes people feel like they really can't do anything because, I mean, we're in kind of a position where we're young enough where we don't feel like we have any power, you know? I mean, we don't really have money or resources or anything like that to start up. So I guess what I have to say is a thing that does give hope is that we don't have to, is that we can join something. We're the younger generation, so we should really take up with stuff the older generation has already started, you know, and just, but make it our own.
Right.
And that's something that I think young people have a problem with because we kind of want to make, like, we want our own thing, and that's, we don't really want to do anything related to what the older people want, you know. It's our project, or we want to do this our own way. And I think that kind of ignorance is, again, another disconnect between people.
Yeah, I have a sense that kids of your age and younger, that a lot of old souls are kind of coming in the world, that you're teaching, there's going to be something that comes out of your generation along the lines of being very present and living in the moment, being in the joy of that, not needing much to be happy, and sharing easily, just kind of all being in the same boat. Not so oriented towards, it seems like so many generations have been oriented towards the future and the goal when they forget that the journey is the destination. It's not finally getting there, and all of a sudden you get there and say, hey, I've worked all my whole life and I feel empty. I'm retired, but I don't feel like I've done anything. Where my, here it is, it's just a story that says, when we don't have much, we're really grateful and present to be in the moment and in the magic of life. Don't know.
With youth, I look at how much work students are putting into their college classes. And if you could take all of that time that they're spending and that they're paying a lot of money
and channel it somewhere else,
you know, that I think we could accomplish a tremendous amount. So the university isn't necessarily something that I'm doing for the students. It's a way that I'd like to access, because there's so much that needs to be done. There's so many things that need to be researched, things that we need to be communicating in ways that people get it. And you need somebody who has the dedicated time. But it's all being kind of diverted, you know, through this agenda that is in the educational system now.
And just diverted because people need to survive and get by. We put an awful lot of time and energy into how we're going to make money to do whatever we're going to do.
Right. And they're going to spend the rest of their lives doing that. This is the one time that they're paying. So they could be, you know, basically putting that money aside for a house and instead using that time to get an education, not necessarily a credential.
I just love that you're doing what you're doing and that you're bringing a lot of this up. Food for thought. There's a lot of things to look at on the internet, YouTube, a lot of things out there to distract us, to keep us from being, knowing ourselves and being our own soul authority, our own self-authority to choose what we want to do in our life and move in that direction. It's not an easy thing to be a human being these days, but it's really fabulous to have you as a model doing this kind of work in the world and to be influencing your children and your neighbors and your neighborhood. So I just really celebrate the fact that you're doing what you're doing. You're here to inspire hopefully other folks who are listening to do something, whatever they can.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, if you want to get a hold of Teresa, you can go to foodinthehood.org or thirdparadigm.org or go to university.us and see what she's up to. You're looking for allies. Do people send you things to add into, or is it all just strictly created by you?
Oh, no. I get things from so many different people. I get things from Bangladesh, from the UK, from all over the country. So it's been a tremendous thing to have this network from all over the world. I just would love to have a network that was local.
Cool. Well, let's wish that for the New Year's.